There's many reasons why U.S. interest rate may be moving higher. One could be that the economic outlook in the U.S. looks better. It could be about fiscal concerns.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. While emerging markets suffered huge portfolio outflows at the beginning of the pandemic, the latest Global Financial Stability Report shows capital flows have returned and the outlook continues to improve, partly because of low interest rates in countries like the U.S. Fabio Natalucci is Deputy Director of the Monetary and Capital Markets Department and heads the GFSR, as it's known. The latest report released today takes a close look at the possibility of rising interest rates and what that would mean for emerging market economies trying to recover from the pandemic. So why so much focus on interest rates in this report?
So we have seen a significant increase in U.S. interest rate in particular since the beginning of the year. Very little change in the two-year tenor, that it's mostly where the Fed has indicated they will keep interest rate unchanged for a while. But we have seen the 10-year, for example, going up almost 85 basis points, and even longer maturity like the 30 years up 70 basis points, including also an increase in interest rate volatility. Now, there's many reasons why U.S. interest rate may be moving higher. One could be that the economic outlook in the U.S. looks better. So we see a stronger economy, the recovery is coming. It could be about fiscal concern. There is a huge amount of treasury securities that would be have to be issued in the U.S. to finance fiscal support. So there could be concern about the interest rate that will have to be paid on new issuance. It could be also that people and investors are challenging the Fed views that rates will be, the policy rates will be on hold for years to come. Now, of course, different reasons have different implication interpretation, but ultimately there are also implications for borrowers. Higher U.S. rates means higher borrowing costs for households, for example, for corporates when you account for credit spread. As well, also the U.S. Treasury are the benchmark for pricing of global financial assets in the world. Another dimension that matters is the speed, whether rates are increasing gradually, again, reflecting and improving the outlook, or whether there is a rapid and persistent increase in interest rate, in which case it could put some pressure on risk assets like, for example, equity valuation. One of the justifications for high elevated valuation of equity has been that the gap with interest rates remain quite wide. So they are still attractive on a relative basis compared to U.S. rates. But if you start seeing rates moving higher, that could challenge that interpretation.
So you're talking about the possibility of higher interest rates, but for most people, I mean, what they're seeing are interest rates at all-time lows. And you know, with the Fed, as you mentioned there, I mean, the Federal Reserve is saying that they're going to stay that way for another couple of years at least. So can you explain the current interest rate dynamics and why emerging markets specifically really do need to worry about what direction they're taking?
Right. So just to put it in perspective, right? So the 10-year yield in the U.S. today, it's about 1.7%. It's a significant increase since the late summer of last year when it was only 50 basis points. But if you go back many years, for example, in mid-2007, pre-global financial crisis, the 10-year was almost 5%, around 5%, right? But even then, since, say, 2011, all the way up to the pandemic, the 10-year has been moving around in a range of between 1 and 3%. So even in historical perspective, we are still quite low in terms of U.S. nominal interest rate. As you indicated, the Fed has suggested that they will keep rates on hold for a while. So if you look at the economic projection from the Fed, they have the median participants at zero through 2023. Although there are some FOMC participants that they see an increase in interest rates, say in 2023. So one way to decompose, and that's another way to look at this, is to take the 10-year and think about how much of this is driven by expectation about policy rate. So what the Fed essentially will do with the federal fund rate vis-a-vis the term premium. And we need to think about term premium as a compensation that investors require to bear duration risk. Essentially looking at either holding a long-term bond or rolling over short-term bonds over the maturity of that bond. How much more you need to be compensated for holding that bond. Now, this is where we see that the expected path of policy hasn't changed much. So a big chunk of the increase in US interest rate has been driven by this term premium. Now, that can have spillover to emerging markets through a number of channels. We have seen local currency yield in emerging markets starting to increase, particularly since mid-February when US real rates have moved up, although they have increased less than US rates. In particular, we have seen a correlation between increase in US term premia and increase in emerging market term premia. And that's an important fact. There's a section in the GFSR where we estimate essentially that a 1% increase in US term premium leads to about 60 basis points increase in emerging market term premium on average. This is important because the decline in emerging market term premium after the pandemic was one of the key reasons why we have seen a decline in funding costs for emerging markets. Now, fortunately, so far we have seen very little increase in sovereign and corporate bond spreads in emerging markets. Now, what another channel is through tighter global financial conditions. That, alongside with higher inflation expectation EM, has led to a rise in policy expectation in many emerging markets. In fact, we have seen a number of central banks in emerging markets hiking interest rate, in some cases beyond consensus expectation. So that would be tighter financial condition for EM. Now, third, tighter global financial condition also weigh on capital flows outlook for emerging market, right? So if you get an outflows from emerging markets, that could in fact delay the recovery and raise possibly financial stability concern that have been discussed in a number of global financial stability reports. Now, if you look back so far, we have seen portfolio flows in Q4, they had one of the best on record, about more than $200 billion of flow to emerging markets. And that was very much broad-based across most emerging markets. Now, February, March, when rates are moving higher, we have seen some pressure in terms of capital flows to EM. We have seen some outflows from equities with some volatility there. And we have seen some outflows more persistent in local currency bond. At the same time, issuance, particularly hard currency issuance, has seen the best January and the second best month ever. But even there in March, we start to see some pressure with a decline in issuance. So in some sense, it is important to think about what are the implications of higher rates for emerging markets and through which channel emerging market may be affected. Why there are concerns? Because people are still thinking back to the taper tantrum of 2013, when we saw interest rates moving higher, we saw outflows from emerging markets, and a number of negative consequences for the EM asset class. If we compare where local currency rates are today with other prior episodes, for example, the 2013 taper tantrum, the post-2016 US election, we've seen that local rates have moved more or less along the same pattern, but spreads have done much better. There are also other differences with the taper tantrum episode of 2013. One of them being that these flows into emerging markets now come on the heel of very large outflows, while back there we have seen inflows into emerging markets pre-taper tantrum. And also the external position in emerging markets much better than it was back then. So we have a lower current account deficit, if not surplus, and we see a much better position in terms of reserves. So from that standpoint, the position of emerging markets, it's stronger than it was back then.
But there is still, cause for concern in terms of how emerging markets might, continue their economic recovery post-pandemic. How much would the global economy actually feel a lagging recovery in the emerging market economies? And is there any way for the stronger economies of the world to help support those countries that are actually struggling?
Right. So I think we mentioned in the January Global Financial Stability Update that emerging markets growth on average between 2017 and 2019 accounted for about two-thirds of global growth, or 40% ex-China. So clearly, if there is a slowdown in growth in emerging markets, may have implication for global growth more broadly. In terms of what we see the recovery, if you look at the World Economic Outlook or the Global Financial Stability Report, the baseline in terms of recovery is one where we expect an asynchronous divergent recovery, where many emerging markets will be lagging behind. That's already the baseline, if you want. Now, around the baseline, this baseline, there is a risk that financial condition in emerging markets may tighten markedly, particularly if policymakers in advanced economies take steps toward policy normalization, and rates in, say, the US and other advanced economies countries start rising rapidly and in a persistent manner. that, as I mentioned, could pose challenges to emerging markets, particularly because emerging market government financing needs remain particularly high, right? Those financing needs results from their policy, the fiscal policy response to the pandemic, and they may continue sometime given the fact that vaccine supplies continue at this point to favor high-income countries, and also because emerging markets are more limited policy space than advanced economies. So what can advanced economies do to help struggling EMs? One is an increase in the allocation of SDR. This is something that's been discussed now, as you've seen on the press, particularly if members with strong external position that do not need additional SDR may be willing to reallocate to most vulnerable countries. Another way to help is many countries may need additional assistance, particularly through the debt service suspension initiative, as well as through concessional and emerging financing from official creditors. And then the common framework for debt treatments can serve as a flexible tool to meet the needs of countries on a case-by-case basis. So, in fact, the international community may consider broadening the coverage of eligible countries for the common framework beyond the current list of countries that are eligible for debt service suspension initiative, particularly in many frontier economies that have seen a deterioration in market access conditions.
So lastly, if these countries do manage to restructure some of their debt, what might the long-term consequences of this pandemic be for these emerging and frontier market economies in terms of growth and stability going forward?
First of all, I think I would note that it's important, in fact, first of all, to actually successfully complete a debt restructure in a way that opens up fiscal space and eventually improve market access. So an orderly debt restructuring obviously would be preferable to a disorderly default outcome, in the sense that a disorderly outcome may have longer lasting implication, negative implication in terms of market access and availability of foreign capital. Now, for country highly indebted and distressed issuers, an orderly outcome would allow what they are now scarce resources to be diverted toward critical health and capital spending in the next few years, as opposed to toward external debt payments. Some countries with sustainable debt may benefit from reprofiling of their debt service to ease liquidity pressure, gain some fiscal space, and reduce debt vulnerabilities. Now, if you go beyond the debt restructuring discussion, it is true that the GDP level for many emerging markets will remain well below the pre-pandemic trend for many years to come, as has been discussed in the World Economic Outlook. Fiscal support in emerging markets has been more limited. They face higher debt service costs that are expected to constrain their ability to address social needs in terms of poverty, inequality, and also correct the setback in terms of productive capacity. So human capital, for example, that occur during the crisis. In addition, the longer the recession lasts, the more likely is that its effect will be permanent. So we will see we'll be facing scarring, given the prevalence of, for example, relatively small firms, shallow capital markets, that may actually have a negative impact in terms of both employment and investment for a long time. And then finally, I would note also that that scenario would have negative implication for emerging market banks. And corporates in emerging markets rely heavily on banks, as non-bank lender channels are more limited compared to advanced economies. So if you start seeing problems at the sovereign level, you could see problems at the corporate level, and implication also for the sovereign with what we call the sovereign bank nexus.
Fabio Natalucci, Deputy Director in the Monetary and Capital Markets Department. Thanks so much for this.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You'll find the latest Global Financial Stability Report and other IMF flagship reports at imf.org. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.